Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. O God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? O God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? Edgar Allan Poe. Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Haunted Collection with your host, author, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, Kevin Kane. Coming to you now from the very room where I keep a lot of my haunted dolls. Even as I speak, they surround me, watching me, wondering, what is he up to now? Perhaps they might speak while I record, and if you hear them, be sure to message me and let me know. I will be sharing more of the stories of the Haunted Collection someday soon, but for tonight, since we're at the end of January in the middle of winter, I decided to have a couple of winter horror stories for tonight. We were supposed to have snow a few days ago, but it skipped by us, so we're probably lucky we weren't trapped in those cold, forbidden winds and the ice creeping along the road. However, let my stories creep into your soul right now, giving you a chill. A chill to kiss your marrow. Let me start with a story called The Woman in White. This story comes from Japan. Two woodcutters were on their way home late one evening. One of the woodcutters, Mosaku, was an old man. The other, Minokichi, his assistant, was 18 years old. The weather was very cold, and it started to snow. The woodcutters had to cross a wide river before they reached their village. There was no bridge on the river. The only way to get across was by using a small ferry boat. When Mosaku and Minokichi reached the river, they found the boatman had gone for the night. He had tied his boat on the other side of the river. The woodcutters could not cross the river that night, so they decided to take shelter in the ferryman's hut. There was no heat. Still, the two thought themselves lucky just to be out of the wind on such a night. The storm was growing worse by the moment. Old Mosaku fell asleep quickly. Minokichi was cold and uncomfortable. He lay on the floor of the hut, listening to the wind howling. Finally, he also fell asleep. Suddenly, Minokichi was awakened by a blast of icy air. Someone had opened the door to the hut. The snow was blowing in his face. Then he became aware of the figure of a woman standing in the room. The woman was dressed all in white. She was leaning over the old man, breathing on him. Her frozen breasts looked like white smoke puffing from her lips. The woman then turned to Minokichi. He tried to get up, but he could not move. He tried to scream, but he was unable to make a sound. The woman leaned closer and closer to him. Minokichi could see that she was very beautiful, but there was something about her eyes that terrified him. The woman stopped and looked at Minokichi. She smiled, and then she said softly, "I was going to kill you, just like I killed the old man. But you are very young, and you are very handsome. I feel sorry for you, so I'm going to let you live. But if you ever say a word about what you have seen tonight to anyone, even your own mother, I will know. Then I will kill you. Remember what I say." The woman turned, walked through the doorway, and disappeared into the snow. As soon as she was gone, Minokichi found he was able to move again. He rushed to the door, but could not see the woman, nor could he find any footprints in the snow. He began to think it had all been a dream. He went over to Masaku to tell the old man about the dream. The old man did not move. He was cold and dead. It had been no dream. The storm let up by morning. When the boatman came to his hut, he found Minokichi unconscious next to the frozen corpse of the old man. It took Minokichi a long time to recover from that terrible night. But he did not forget the warning that the woman in white had given him. He did not say anything about what he had seen or thought he had seen that night. After a few months, Minokichi went back to his job of woodcutter. Every morning he went out into the forest, and every evening he made his way back to his village. One winter evening, about a year after the night in the boatman's hut, Minokichi met a girl on the road. She was tall, slim, and very good looking. Since they were both going in the same direction, Minokichi and the girl started talking. She told him that her name was Oyuki. She was a poor orphan, and she was looking for a job as a servant. The more they walked, the more charmed Minokichi became. He asked Oyuki if she was married or had any plans to be married. She replied no. By the time they reached the village, Minokichi had made up his mind that this was the girl that he wanted to marry. He took Oyuki to his house to meet his widowed mother. She was also charmed by the young woman. And so, as things turned out, Oyuki never went any further looking for a servant's job. She remained in Minokichi's house and became his wife. She was a very good wife. When Minokichi's mother died 5 years later, her last words were praise of her daughter-in-law. As the years went by, Oyuki bore Minokichi 10 children, 5 boys and 5 girls. They were all unusually tall and strong, and all very light like their mother. At first, the people of the village were suspicious of Oyuki. They were country people and suspicious of all strangers. But finally, they came to accept her, even to admire her. Still, they knew she was different. In the village, life was hard. After a woman had a few children, she aged. She began to look like an old woman. But Oyuki had 10 children, and yet she had not aged at all. She looked just the same as she had the day she entered the village for the first time. One night, after the children had gone to sleep, Oyuki was sewing by lamplight. Her husband looked at her. For the first time, he noticed something. "You know," he said, "seeing you there in the lamplight reminds me of something that happened to me a long time ago. It was before I met you. I was only 18. Without lifting her eyes from her sewing, Oyuki said, "Oh, tell me about what happened." Minokichi then told her about the terrible night in the hut. He told her about the woman in white who had bent over him, smiling and whispering. "As I remember her, she looked very much like you do now," he said. "Of course, it was a long time ago, and it may all have been a dream." Oyuki threw down her sewing. She rushed over to Minokichi, where he sat, leaned over him, and shrieked in his face. "It was I, and I told you that I would kill you if you ever said one word about it to anyone. If it were not for those children asleep in there, I would kill you this moment. Now you had better take very good care of them. If they ever have reason to complain about you, I will know about it, and I will treat you as you deserve." As she screamed, her voice faded off into a howl like the wind, and she melted away to a white mist that disappeared through the chimney. She was never seen again. Ooh, that was a chilling story all the way from Japan, huh? Really a good story to tell on a cold winter's night, especially if it's snowing outside. But be forewarned, if you do see snow outside, you just might see the woman in white coming to your door. Whatever you do, don't answer. And so we move on to another story, the second story of my episode. This story actually comes from the USA, right here, where I'm from. And it's also a story that's often told during the winter time. No one really knows if this story is true or not, but there are a lot of people, especially up in the north, in the mountainous regions and snowy areas, who will swear to you, especially Native Americans, will swear to you that it's true. This story is called The Wendigo. John Reynolds and Ross McCrae from Philadelphia were going on a long-planned camping and hunting trip to Western Canada. For 2 weeks, they would get off into the wilds, far, far away from civilization. They were going to a place where they didn't have to worry about running into a lot of other campers or hunters. John had heard about a little town on the edge of the forest that they could use as a jumping-off place. When they got to town, they found it was barely a town at all, more like a trading post where the local Indians would come to buy whatever supplies they needed. Though John and Ross were experienced woodsmen, they knew that they would need a guide to take them into the rugged country. They thought it would be easy to hire a guide, but they soon discovered that it was nearly impossible. Though the Indians were very poor and quite obviously needed work of some sort, when they were asked about becoming guides, they always came up with an excuse as to why they couldn't. Either their wife or mother was sick and they had to stay behind and attend to her, or they were waiting for another party that they guided every year and could not disappoint, or they had to go somewhere else and didn't know anything about the woods. These excuses were all transparently false. What was clear was that the local Indians didn't want to go into the woods, no matter how much money they were offered. After hanging around the trading post for a couple of days, John and Ross discovered the real reason. The Indians were afraid to go into the woods because the woods were said to be inhabited by the Wendigo. The men from Philadelphia were not quite sure what the Wendigo was supposed to be. Some sort of real creature or a demon or spirit of the woods. But whatever it was, it had the Indians of the area terrified. They said that no one who had ever seen the thing remained alive and sane. The Wendigo worked in strange ways. It would pick out a particular person in a group. The person would begin to hear strange noises and smell strange smells that no one else in the group could hear or smell. Sometimes the man who had been chosen as victim by the Wendigo would say that he could see the creature's eyes glowing in the darkness beyond the firelight. But no one else was ever able to see those glowing eyes. Finally, the Wendigo would begin to call to its victim, and that would be the end. No one could resist the call of Wendigo. The victim would rush out into the woods and never be seen again. Or almost never. A few of the Wendigo's victims had been found later. What, you may ask, had happened to them? When asked that question, the Indians would just turn away. They did not want to talk about it. It was too horrible. Now, John and Ross regarded all of this business about the Wendigo as ignorant superstition, and they didn't want to have their trip ruined because of it. They persisted in trying to find a guide, and finally, they found one. He was an Indian named DeFago, who was desperately in need of money. When they offered DeFago twice the usual guide's fee, he reluctantly agreed to take the men into the woods. DeFago was silent most of the time. He marched grimly through the woods ahead of his charges and communicated mainly by pointing or with an occasional grunt. After they had been in the woods for 2 days, DeFago's manner changed. From time to time, he would stop suddenly and look around as though he had heard a strange noise. John and Ross heard nothing unusual. Then DeFago would put his nose in the air and begin to sniff, as though he had caught the faint odor of something strange. John and Ross could smell nothing unusual. When they asked the Indian guide what was going on, he would not answer. The hunters had been out for a week, and each day DeFago's actions became stranger and stranger. He never seemed to sleep, but sat up all night listening and watching. But for what? He said nothing. John and Ross became genuinely concerned for their guide's sanity and for their own safety as well, for they would be lost in the woods without him. Then one evening a snowstorm hit. Such storms were not uncommon in autumn in that part of the northern part of the United States and that part of Canada. Though they might be violent, they usually didn't last too long. The men built a fire and prepared to spend the night. DeFago assumed his usual attitude, sitting by the fire, listening and watching. But this night in the storm, he seemed to be more tense and more alert than ever. The wind was howling through the trees, and the noise kept John and Ross awake. As they listened to the wind, it began to sound as if it was a voice in the distance calling, "DeFago! DeFago!" Do you hear that? Said John. No, I don't, said Ross, and you don't either. It's just the wind. You can't let your imagination get the better of you. We're in enough trouble already. We're in the middle of the woods in a snowstorm, and our guide is going completely nuts. The two men finally fell asleep. They were awakened again by a scream. Not an imaginary scream, but a real scream. Very close. They crawled out of the tent and saw DeFago standing by the fire, with his hands over his ears and screaming into the night. Then from out of the woods, the wind or something cried out, DeFago! DeFago! Out there in the darkness, John and Ross thought they saw two red, glowing eyes. Was it just an illusion? DeFago gave one more scream.
My feet! My feet! My feet are burning! They're fiery wings and I must fly!
Then he rushed off into the darkness. John and Ross were terrified, but they knew there was nothing they could do until the sun came up. As soon as it did, they tried to follow DeFago's trail in the snow. His moccasin prints were easy to see in the fresh snow. After a short while, they were joined by another set of footprints. But these seemed to have been made by a creature with gigantic, bear-like feet. The two set of prints ran side by side, and it looked as if the guide and the creature had been walking together. As they followed the trail, John and Ross noticed that the human prints began to change. They began to resemble more and more those of the creature. Finally, they were exactly the same shape as those of the creature, only smaller. Then suddenly and mysteriously, both sets of prints disappeared. The two men now realized that they were in great danger. They decided that nothing could be gained by searching for their missing guide, and that they had better try to go back to civilization as quickly as possible before DeFago's terrible fate overtook them. It was to be a hard trip back, for without a guide, the men could not find the trails. 3 days later, John and Ross were sitting by their campfire when they heard a noise in the woods. Out from among the trees staggered a figure. It took a moment for them to recognize that the figure was the missing DeFago. He had been greatly changed in so short a period of time. His face was cut and scarred, and his clothes, or what were left of them, were in tatters. He barely seemed able to speak. He just cried and groaned. Only one word escaped his lips. Wendigo. 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 John and Ross rushed to help the guide. They half dragged, half carried poor DeFago to the fire, where he could get warm. In the flickering light, he looked even worse than he had in the shadows. He looked barely human. Then, remembering the footprints he had seen in the snow, John glanced down and screamed, "Oh my God, look at his feet!" And there the story ends, leaving you to use your imagination on what DeFago's feet look like. Is he still out there running with the Wendigo, or did he return to society? And what exactly is the Wendigo? Well, let me tell you. Whenever you're in the mountainous regions or in the north or anywhere that's woodsy and covered with snow, and you hear the cry of something calling your name, don't follow it. Don't go. Cover your ears. Don't listen. For the Wendigo is coming to take you. And that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is my episode of the Haunted Collection for this month, for this end of January 2019. But I beg you to come back in a couple of weeks when I'll share a few more of my favorite creepy stories and urban legends. But until then, stay safe, keep away from the snow, keep out of the woods, and happy hauntings!